For years, I blamed it on the shorts. The movie shorts, that is. You know, those little human interest stories that preceded the cartoon and main feature in those days? A celebrated archer named Howard Hill was featured performing trick shots and hunting African big game with only a long bow and arrows on the huge drive-in screen. Our family sat packed in our 54 Chevy during a sputtering rain, yet even through sporadic wiper blades and two rambunctious bird dogs clawing my arms and back, I was transfixed and permanently altered as I absorbed the stunning prowess unfolding before me. My brain shifted into a hyperdrive of magical calculations and flawed logic on the spot. My 8-year-old macho gene went ballistic, convincing me I could build a bow and a quiver of arrows at home, then quickly train myself to shoot even better than Howard Hill and become, yes, the greatest archer the world has ever seen. By dawn, I was busting the finished chores, get school out of the way, and rush down to the hog pen, a 3-acre compound of swamp, woods, deadly sows, lush thicket, and most importantly, the breeding ground of tall saplings for my bow making. I hacked down an armful of the straightest candidates I could find and hauled them back to the barn through sleeping sows and piglets. Tiptoeing through the brood, the hair on my neck raised as much from the pure excitement of the work ahead as the fear of pig tusk and their accompanying horror stories. After stripping and scraping my saplings, I agonized through their prolonged drying time, slapped on some of Daddy's sisal baling twine, and pronounced the result a bow. The reed mash grew my arrows, bamboo-like shafts that were mostly straight and readily available. I picked the best from the thick patches using clever knife work to remove the husk. Rooting around in the communal junk drawer yielded a half-clotted bottle of LePage's glue, its rubber applicator well-crusted and hard as a rock. Yet through the miracle of ice-pick technology, a conduit was formed as I augured deep into the precious amber bottle of still-viable adhesives. By smearing scraggly glue lines along the back of an arrow, I managed to coif a handsome mohawk in place for my guidance system. The sharp end needed an arrowhead, and when a nail didn't work, I simply made an oblique slice across the reed like sharpening a quill pen. Wending my way through the self-imposed rigors of shooting fruit, vegetables, eggs, and other unencumbered objects lacking a blood supply, I compressed the learning curve and declared myself quasi-competent in my own mind. Certainly enough to implement my version of William Tell's feat via my younger compliant cousin, Lily Pearl. Watch this, Howard Hill. All right, now hold still, I instructed Lily. Her skinny little back mashed up tight against a scratchy red oak helped steady the apple perched on top of her head. She had straight brown bangs and a simple bowl cut, which contrasted nicely from the whoppy-jawed apple. I drew back the fuzzy string on my bow, supremely confident of watching my bamboo arrow skewer the center of the fruit and let her fly. When the shaft left my bow, confidence was still high, despite the three defining characteristics of my arrow's flight path: the dynamic wobble, the dramatic dip, and the deadly rising curve, not unlike Hoyt Wilhelm's knuckleball. In the face of these anomalies, my arrow still found its mark. Regretfully, that mark was not the sacrificial horse apple resting on the thatch roof of Lily Pearl's head, but rather the delicate tissue in the corner of Cousin's eye. In the precise intersection of her eye's inner edge and the bony slope of her nose, my quill point had embedded itself a solid 3/8 of an inch. The rest of the arrow hung flat against her heaving belly while she stomped a hot-footed dance and chuffed out high decibel piglet squeals. I rushed her aside to tune her down a notch, while I multitasked by scanning the yard for responsible adults. It hurts, she wailed, as I gently tugged at the arrow, but it wouldn't budge. So I gave it a yank and the tip popped free, along with a robust trickle of Lily's best B negative. She lit out for home like a gazelle, and I yelled to her fleeing frame, "Don't tell Aunt Dorothy!" My heart booming like a kodo drum as panic engulfed me. Alone with my guilt, The afternoon slowed. My appetite dwindled, and sleep was fretful. When I awoke without handcuffs on my wrist, I dressed, scarfed down breakfast, and my spirit lifted. I boarded the old yellow school bus at the end of our quarter-mile driveway, having done a credible job of willing away the previous day's nightmare. Lily Pearl's house was the next stop, just a few hundred yards down the highway. The bus driver, another relative, was barely into second gear when she began slowing, and the tortured squeal of brakes triggered a pig squeal flashback to the reality of Lily Pearl in the jiggling era. Panic resurged, and I suddenly imagined her, blind or dead or worse, then suddenly rejoiced to see her standing near her mailbox, ready to board. Oh, thank you, God, thank you, thank you, thank you so. Whoa, who's that with Lily Pearl? No, no, please, no, not Aunt Dorothy. This is not good, not good at all. Aunt Dorothy's glare alone could curdle the blood of a Navy SEAL. My heart plunged, and a lump the size and shape of a blue channel crab coagulated in my throat. The mama bear herself boarded first, moving quickly up the aisle toward me, and proceeded to get right to it. How come you shot Lily Pearl in the eye, huh? I distinctly remembered the two huhs, and being stinking drunk on fear and panic, I denied it all. Oh, Lordy, Aunt Dorothy, I didn't do it. Wasn't me. I don't know who did it, but I didn't do it, I blubbered, my entire soliloquy spewing out as one long word. I felt the heat of her glare sizzling into me like a pair of burning coals, and a third, huh, was all she offered before turning around and exiting the bus. I was obviously unworthy of her prolonged ire. Lily Pearl just stood there looking at me with her guileless face and scabby eye, the little fawn who loved me. As she sat down, a life lesson began to leach through the rind of my oblivion, that you are responsible for your own actions, and from that day forward, I have never, ever again used a human as a fruit or vegetable pedestal.